welcome to the Development Podcast from the World Bank Group in Washington, D.C. and around the globe. I'm Paul Blake.
And I'm Raka Banerjee. On today's show, debt and the developing world. How some of the world's neediest countries are suspending some of their debt repayments so that they can focus their resources on fighting COVID-19.
The Debt Service Suspension Initiative is a way to give developing countries more resources in a time they need the most now when the crisis is happening.
We hear from the expert overseeing the program and ask why some countries haven't yet signed up for assistance.
But first, let's kick things off by getting all the data and background we need from Raka.
I think one of the most important things to know in terms of the context of debt in the developing world is that economists at the World Bank and elsewhere have been concerned about rising levels of debt in low-income countries for quite some time now.
Yeah, I've been hearing about this a little bit. I mean, I've largely been thinking about debt in relation to the pandemic, the current crisis, but I've been hearing a lot about how there is this larger issue than just what we've been seeing since the pandemic hit.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the Development Committee, and, you know, for those that don't know, that's the Board of Governors of both the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. They put out a report back in September 2018, so 2 years ago, debt vulnerabilities in emerging and low-income economies. And that pretty much sums it up right there. Basically, it's that public debt in emerging economies has been rising substantially in recent years. It's actually reaching levels that we haven't seen since the 1980s.
Okay, so that report says that emerging economies, even before COVID came along, before any of us had heard of COVID, they have been taking on more debt in the past several years. What does that sort of mean for them? You know, I guess kind of like the gut reaction is debt's a bad thing, but is it necessarily a bad thing? Like, is public debt necessarily a bad thing?
So, you know, that's a good question. And it's not necessarily the case. But in that same report, what we see is that about 40% of low-income countries are in what's called debt distress. And that's not just because they're taking on more public debt, but also because the type of debt is changing. So it's called a change in debt composition. So basically, we're seeing a lot more corporate debt in emerging economies, which means higher debt service costs, how much you're paying on that debt, as well as higher refinancing and interest rate risks.
So that debt composition, that's almost like the mixture of different types of debt
exactly.
That those countries are holding.
Exactly.
So that's the background. That's what we're sort of starting with. And now on top of that, we got the coronavirus pandemic sweeping the world. And from what I've been hearing, that the depth of the recession that we're facing, at least one thing, and I don't know this necessarily to be true, that the depth of the recession that we're facing as a result of the impacts of COVID-19 on the economy, it's twice as deep as what we dealt with in the 2008 financial crisis. Is that right? I mean, that's a statistic I heard the other day, and that seems like huge to me.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, remembering, you know, what we all went through during the 2008 financial crisis, yes, it is. The latest statistics are that the recession that we're expecting is twice as deep as that. And what that means is that it's really critical for countries, especially low-income countries, to have access to financial resources right now, you know, to support their citizens in managing and recovering from the COVID-19 crisis. And yet, from the most recent data that we have, public debt in low and middle-income countries, in the most recent data is from 2018, was 51% of GDP. So basically, a lot of the financial resources that countries really would be relying on to support their citizens is currently tied up in servicing their high levels of debt.
Okay, so you've got to give me some good news, some hope here. What exactly is going on to help these countries when it comes to their debt levels?
Yeah, so that is the good news. So the World Bank's Development Data Group recently did an exercise to understand, just to get a handle on how much money is going to be coming due for these countries in servicing their debt, paying for their debt during 2020 and 2021. And it turns out that official bilateral debt service payments, so that's payments on bilateral debt in highly indebted countries, it's expected to come to almost $14 billion in 2020 alone. So that means that because of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund's Debt Service Suspension Initiative, the DSSI.
They're essentially call for that. They've called for that suspension. And the G20 finance ministers, as I understand, basically like, okay, yes, we can agree to that.
Exactly. And that means that it can really have a big impact on the financial resources that low-income countries will have available to draw on for protecting their citizens during this pandemic.
So it seems to me that it's been essential that we have this data first and foremost. Whether it's us responding, whether it's those countries responding, having that data available just seems really crucial when you're facing something like COVID-19.
Absolutely. You know, it's basically debt transparency is really critical. And that's why the World Bank has a debtor reporting system, the DRS. And ultimately, that's why I'm such a firm believer in the power of data.
Yeah. And I mean, that the idea of kind of debt transparency has been something that Marcelo Estevao, who we're going to interview later in this program, for months since I've known him, has basically like stressed to me is so important, you know, having that data at hand. So anyway, thank you for sharing your love of data with us all again and for sort of giving us the background we need to understand all of this.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Paul.
Well, helping oversee this initiative is the World Bank's Marcelo Estevao, the Global Director for Macroeconomics, Trade, and Investment.
We recently had the chance to talk in depth with him, down the line from his home, about the debt situation in the developing world and the role of the Debt Service Suspension Initiative in responding to COVID-19.
We began by asking him about the debt situation in developing countries before COVID-19 even arrived on the scene.
Indeed, many developing countries had been already on a worrisome debt path even before COVID hit. If you look at the average ratio of debt to GDP for all countries that borrow from IDA, IDA is the World Bank grant and concessional lending arm, we saw reductions till 2013. And the ratio of debt to GDP is what one of the ratios we track to make sure that countries can pay the debt that they have. So anyway, we saw a reduction till 2013, including because of past debt forgiveness and high economic growth in the first decade of the 2000s. Since then, as a group, that ratio has been increasing, and the crisis exacerbated this trend because of the impact of the health crisis on the economy and thus on the ability of countries to repay their financial commitments. The crisis affected countries' ability to produce goods and services and export them, which reduced fiscal revenues drastically. We already see that in some data. Also because there is a great pressure to spend more to protect the most vulnerable parts of society.
Mm-hmm. Marcelo, back in April, the World Bank and the IMF called for debt service suspension specifically to help the poorest countries manage the impact of the pandemic and all the costs they would have related to the pandemic. That was endorsed by the G20 countries, I believe, back in April. Do you have a sense of what has happened in the 3 months since then? Is the initiative working? Is it helping?
It is helping. Like I said, the countries need to find a way to finance greater fiscal spending. So far, 39 countries have signed up for it, and more may be joining in coming weeks. If you want to follow the progress of the initiative, I invite you to check our website.
Oh yeah, I was taking a look at that website, and it's really cool to see the details there. I think I saw that countries altogether, if they suspended their debt service payments, they could save around $12 billion, if I've got that right. But it seems like you said that more countries are joining, but it seems like so far many of the countries that are eligible haven't yet joined. Can you explain that, or do you know why that is?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, before explaining that, many of the countries that would really benefit from this initiative have already signed up. This group of 39 okay. countries that I mentioned accounts for about 3/4 of the total official bilateral debt service due between May 1st and December 31st of this year. That's the time that the initiative is covering. So there's already a significant take-up, but you're right. Some countries haven't joined. Among those countries that have not joined the initiative so far are countries that do not have much, if at all, official bilateral debt due during this period. So, you know, for them, there's no use to join. Some of the countries feel they have enough access to capital markets and the benefits of joining the initiative are not high enough to disrupt the well-established financing plans. So that's a judgment call. They may have some official bilateral credit that is relevant, but they feel they can fund that. And so they haven't moved yet. And there is a group of countries that simply work in the mechanics of joining the initiative and may do so soon. So this number 39 may go up in the coming weeks.
And, you know, my understanding is that this isn't debt service suspension for debt service suspension's sake, that, you know, the World Bank and the IMF have been abundantly clear that the savings made through DSSI, that they must be invested in responding and recovering to or recovering from the pandemic. Can you give us an idea of how these funds could make a difference to some of the most vulnerable people, these savings, how they will be making a difference on the ground?
Yeah. I mean, as I said before, fiscal revenues are going down, but the needs, fiscal needs, are going up. The funds that country would have paid in that service can be used to plug some of this hole and fund transfer programs targeted to the most needy among the population. Our economists can help authorities increase the capacity to target these funds. For instance, we have been working with tax administrations on ways to increase administrative efficiency and information and getting to know the taxpayer universe better. That helps curb tax evasion, which is one objective, but also could allow tax authorities to better target transfers. Resources can also be directed to support viable firms, not just households. And these firms, for no fault of their own, are facing hard times as well. So if I summarize the name of the game here during this time of, you know, of the crisis, is really to help people and firms to survive this period of weak economic activity driven by the health crisis. The idea is to protect their productive capital and processes, so firms and workers are ready to produce again when the health crisis dissipates and demand for products and services return.
I just, going back to the website, I was really struck by just the level of detail in terms of individual countries, you know, how much they owe creditors, how much they're paying to service debt. And I wonder if you could speak to the role of transparency and how that relates to helping these low-income countries build back after COVID.
Yeah, now this is an agenda that is dear to our heart and the heart of many policymakers. Public debt transparency plays a critical role in preventing debt crisis, and they do so by supporting sustainable borrowing and lending practices. So greater debt transparency enables borrowers and lenders to effectively evaluate the sustainability of public debt and to take mm-hmm. informed decisions. I had a conversation with Paul about that like 6 months ago or so. It acts as a preventive mechanism by allowing the monitoring of emerging risks, formulating debt strategies, and building early warning systems. Interesting that transparency also increases accountability, which is another important concept here. And they do so while at the same time enabling countries to obtain and maintain investor confidence. So it's important to remark on this last point that increased debt transparency can also facilitate better governance and aid the fight against corruption. And finally, I mean, which I think maybe I should have said first, that data transparency also enables the participation of citizens in the long-term development of their respective countries with the potential to lead to less corruption. So it's important for citizen participation.
You mentioned that conversation mm-hmm. we had a couple months back. Yeah, and like I said, my sort of takeaway was from that is it's about informed decision-making by governments, creditors, the general public.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. In terms of the role of, you know, the development banks, you know, like the World Bank and other development banks, you know, I hear quite a bit of criticism sometimes for why not just simply cancel the debt held by these low-income countries as opposed to, you know, just suspending it. So, you know, the question is basically why not just wipe the slate clean for these lower-income countries during this time of crisis?
The answer is simply because it's not needed and can even hurt the ability of multilateral development banks to provide cheap funding to developing countries. Let me explain a little bit more. So multilateral development banks as a group will transfer a large amount of net financial flows to developing countries this year in the middle of the crisis, while, you know, other crises are kind of you know, trying not to lend more, we are actually increasing the amount of net financial flows. So what I mean is, while some debt service will be paid to multilateral development banks, the amount transferred immediately to these countries, and that is at a concession interest rate or grants, is much larger. In the case of AIDA, this ratio is 1 to 15 this year, with a large share of grants. So for every dollar that comes in terms of payment of debt service, $15 goes out. And again, as a concessional loan or grants. And the reason we can do this, by the way, is because we are able to borrow very cheaply at the marketplace, well, relatively cheaply, given our high credit rating. Canceling debts to the World Bank would hurt our capital base significantly, unless bank shareholders plug this hole immediately. And if the health of our balance sheet is in question, our credit rating would worsen. Borrowing costs for AIDA would go up, which would lower our ability to keep these large transfers to the countries at cheap rates. So it's one of these things that may seem like a good idea, but if you really think through it, it doesn't seem quite a good idea. And unless stars are very much aligned. And we don't want to do anything that would hurt our ability to provide net positive flows to the countries.
Well, Marcelo, super grateful for your time. Thank you so much for taking the time to explain it all to us.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure talking with you.
Great. No, it's my pleasure. And you too, stay safe, stay healthy.
Marcelo Estevao is the World Bank Group's Global Director for Macroeconomics, Trade, and Investment. He joined us down the line from his home in the Washington, D.C. area. Well, that brings us to a close on this edition of the Development Podcast.
As always, and I say this every time, but it's true, we do welcome your mail. Drop us a line using thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org.
In the next few weeks, we'll be getting an update on education as some parts of the world start to pivot towards reopening schools and recovering from the pandemic.
Yeah, we're looking forward to speaking to Jaime Saavedra, the World Bank's Global Director for Education. Some of you might remember he was on the show a couple weeks back talking about how COVID and the lockdown was impacting global education. He's coming back to give us an update on what the situation is now. So definitely looking forward to that conversation.
That's right. So send us your questions about what this pandemic and the lockdown have meant for learning and education around the world. Again, just email us using thedevelopmentpodcast@worldbank.org.
Yeah, we want to know what you want to know, and we will put some of those questions, hopefully, if we get enough from you guys, to Jaime himself. But until then, let's draw this show to a close. We'll see you back here again soon.
Bye.